Firepower with Will Johnson. Only at band.video.
Good evening and welcome. Firepowernews.com, band.video, band.video. So, the Democrats have virtually fired off the first round in this coup against President Trump and the American people. The Democrats have made it completely clear, and we have to kind of give them credit, because they're no longer hiding their agenda on what they're doing on the Hill. It's completely evident that the Democrats' primary goal is impeaching this president. These impeachment hearings are costing the American people a dollar sign that they have yet to release. And it's just another divisive tactic the liberal left is using to tear down this country. They want to tear down this country. Talking about the Democrats. Ask yourself, when did we become a society where hearsay, opinions, parodies, and feelings supersede facts? The liberal left has become so radicalized, their Lord and Savior, Barack Hussein Obama, had to come out of his hole to try to get them back on track. Imagine that. The left has gone so far that they have started to reject Obama himself. They're rejecting him. They're rejecting the words that Obama is saying. That's how far left they have gone. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So ask yourself, what do you think when Obama was suggesting telling them not to break down the system? What do you think he was talking about? What do you think he was referring to? You know, he was referring to the system of the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights. See, the Democrats have come to a custom where they hate the Bill of Rights because we have our freedoms. We have our Second Amendment. So they have to get rid of it. And I think that's part of the reason why they are attacking President Trump the way they are with these impeachment hearings. Not a single witness came forward with direct evidence, with direct information from the president himself that said he did anything that they're alleging. Not a single one of them. But to them, we're supposed to believe that everything that they're coming out with is factual when it's not. See, the left already has this movement where they have become somewhat, where they have successfully, somewhat, in different states, removed the Electoral College. Now, I've had many people that say the Democrats can't do this, but they're succeeding and they're proceeding, they're moving on with it. You don't believe me? Just Google states give electoral votes to popular vote. Go look at it. You think this impeachment hearings is something that they're just doing? This is the only thing they're doing? When they say they can walk and chew gum, they're doing other things to tear down this nation. For any of us that say the Democrats can't do and won't do this to against our country, you have been asleep for the last 3 years. For the past 3 years, three plus years, actually, what they've been doing to this country has been dividing this country never before since the last Civil War. Everyone's saying it on social media that this is becoming the Civil War 2.0. I don't know about you, but I have children in this world, and I want to protect my children, and I want them to grow up and have the same benefits that I had in this nation. But the Democrats, they want to remove all that. The Democrats are doing everything they can to break it down, to tear it down. So we're going to talk about the impeachment. We're going to talk about the debates. We're going to have some guests. All of this on band.video. Go to band.video and go to firepowernews.com. Band.video and go to Firepower News, and you can watch this video feed live. All right, so check it out. We're going to be live tonight. Band.video. We'll see you in a minute.
effort to accuse our president of coercion, extortion, or bribery with these witnesses as we now come to the closing session of this. Basically break down as follows. We have Kent and Ambassador Taylor, who spoke of hearsay. Their hearsay of these matters that they said that they had heard were all statements that they'd heard from others who have also testified in front of us. So there's no one that's missing. There's no one out there. Kent and Taylor basically said that they'd heard it from Morrison and Sondland. Morrison indicated he'd heard it from Sondland. Sondland testified yesterday he'd heard it from no one on the planet. Vindman and Morrison both have direct testimony of the phone call with the President of the United States. Beyond that, they only had contact with Sondland, and again, Sondland indicated he had contact with no one on the planet. Volker testified that he did have direct contact both with the Ukrainians and with the President of the United States, and indicated that the President of the United States did not condition either a phone call, a meeting, or aid upon Ukraine undertaking investigations, and also testified that the Ukrainians did not believe that either. We also have the direct statements from the President of Ukraine and the Foreign Minister that they did not feel any pressure to undertake investigations. And we also have the evidence that we're all very much aware of, which is they did not undertake any investigations. We also have Yovanovitch and Dr. Hill. Yovanovitch obviously left before the time period. Dr. Hill, we appreciate your being with us today, and Mr. Holmes.
So the whole point is that there's nothing there, Tom. Hey, Tom, thanks for... I know you worked the AJ show yesterday, and it's glad for you to be with us tonight.
You know, well, I'm glad I could be back. And you're right, Will. I mean, there is nothing there. The whole thing, it's a show trial. We already know how this is going to end. The House is going to impeach Trump. It's going to go to the Senate. If Mitch McConnell values his job and not being seen as a complete backstabbing traitor by the entirety of the United States of America, then, or at least the Republican Party, then it's going to die in the Senate. And they're going to use this come 2020 to say, oh, he was impeached. You can't vote for him. He was impeached in the House. So you're right, Will, that we know how this ends. We know that they have no evidence. We know that they have no October surprise. They have no November surprise. They have no December surprise. This is just a foregone conclusion. Orange man bad, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, that's all it is. Orange man bad. They don't care about anything else. Just orange man bad. Orange man has the cure to all elements on the planet. Nope. Orange man bad. Orange man can feed the planet. Nope. Orange man bad. I mean, you know, the insanity of it all. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, you know what? I do understand it, actually, because people have been turned over to a reprobate mind. They don't like reality. They don't like life. They don't like freedoms. They don't like everything that has been achieved in this nation. Or they wouldn't be trying to tear it down. You know, just like I was talking in my opening statement, it dawned on me that they really want to get rid of the U.S. Constitution, Tom. I mean, they really do, because if they get rid of the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, then they can form America the way they see fit. And then they can just lock us up because they disagree with us. Oh, I don't like you. Lock you up.
Well, and in a lot of ways, they already have. I mean, the First Amendment in this country is functionally dead thanks to our Silicon Valley overlords. The Second Amendment is already under attack. It's nowhere what the founders thought it was going to be. Plus, most of the major states, highly densely populated states, virtually every single major city in this country, there is no Second Amendment. No such thing. Doesn't exist. We have no right to privacy. President Trump has no right to face his accuser. The Bill of Rights, the Constitution, is being ripped and shredded and thrown out the window like a discarded receipt from a fast food joint by the Democrat Party on a daily basis.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So the Democrats, you know, they don't deal in facts, right? So they hate the facts. So they make up their own. So we have a clip, right? We're going to play a clip where they were talking about the first they came out and said, we're going to talk about facts. And the Democrats just don't like facts. I don't know why they don't like facts, because I guess the facts hurt. I don't know. Let's go to that clip.
Thank you both for your service. Thank you, Dr. Hill, for your comments on the personal attacks. I wanted to ask you each fact-based questions. Dr. Hill, you testified that you handed over your duties on the NSC to Tim Morrison on July 15th and that you physically left the White House on July 19th, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So that means that by the time there was the July 25th call with President Trump and President Zelensky, you were no longer on the NSC. correct?
Actually, I was still technically on the payroll of the NSC until the end of August, August 30th of 2019. But I was not physically in the building, and I'd handed over my duties to Mr. Morrison.
And you were not on the call?
I was not on the call. That is absolutely correct.
And it's also correct that you did not participate in the preparation of talking points or the specific coordination of setting up the call?
Not for that call, but let me just say for the record that there had been a long anticipation that eventually there would be a call. So there was a call package that was prepared in advance. I just cannot say how much of that call package that had perhaps been prepared since, for example, the inauguration of President Zelensky was then used as the basic material for that call. So I did take part in the preparation of that standard call package, but I did not take part in any preparation for the specific call on July 25th.
And the first time you actually read the transcript of the call was when it was released to the public.
That's correct.
Mr. Holmes, I wanted to turn to you. Good to see you again. Thank you for mentioning the bipartisan delegation that I led on behalf of the House Armed Services Committee with my friend, Representative Anthony Brown from Maryland. We did have an exceptionally informative visit where we highlighted the bipartisan congressional support for Ukraine, in particular the importance of countering Russian aggression. And we discussed in the briefings at the embassy the importance of defensive lethal aid in the form of javelin, which, as you both, I think you stated today, is, quote, an important strategic deterrent to Russia. And I just want to highlight on the record, I know this has been asked, the javelins were provided by the Trump administration and not the Obama administration, correct?
That's correct. And I would just say, I think we discussed the importance of all our security assistance to Ukraine, not just the javelins.
Absolutely. All of our security assistance, which I strongly support.
Wow. So they get javelins instead of blankets, Tom.
That was, of course, the Obama administration. I mean, see, this is the sneaky little thing that they would do. Oh, you want us to give them aid? Okay, here, have some blankies. I hope you sleep warm tonight. The Trump administration does what Congress actually required. I mean, Stefanik, maybe the best thing to come from this entire impeachment debacle has been Stefanik getting some great screen time. I've been fairly impressed by her. I need to learn more about her, find out if she's actually American first or if she's just using this as her opportunity. But I do have to say, Will, and you know, I am not a misogynist. I love women. But that doctor, oh my goodness, what is going on there? Is she Adam Schiff's like strange brother sister creation? I mean, that was
you don't want to misidentify. Woman. You don't want to misidentify they, them, those, whoever they are.
That was I'm staring at my monitor here, Will, and I'm like, and of course I've seen half these clips and I watched a little bit of it earlier today, and I'm just staring like, what on earth? That she has very striking features. I'll just say that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have another clip that we're going to go out with. This is with Stefanik asking the question, as her last question of the week. So let's go to it.
Dr. Hill, turning back to you, there's been discussion about the process of scheduling the meeting between President Zelensky and President Trump. And you testified that there was hesitancy to schedule this meeting until after the Ukrainian parliamentary elections. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And that's because there was speculation in all analytical circles, both in Ukraine and outside the Ukraine, that Zelensky might not be able to get the majority that he needed to form a cabinet, correct?
That is correct.
And you also testified that another aspect of the NSC's hesitancy to schedule this meeting was based on broader concerns related to Zelensky's ability to implement anti-corruption reforms. And this was in specific relation to Ukrainian oligarchs who basically were the owner of the TV company that Mr. Zelensky's program had been a part of. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You know, just distilling this down to the key facts, I wanted to ask both of you three key questions. So the fact of the matter is Ukraine ultimately did receive the aid, correct, Mr. Holmes?
Ultimately.
Yes. And Dr. Hill?
Correct, ultimately.
And there was no investigation into the Bidens, correct, Mr. Holmes?
They did not open a new investigation to the Bidens.
No. Correct. And Dr. Hill?
Correct.
And there was, in fact, a meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky ultimately at the UN. Is that correct?
The president invited Zelensky to the Oval Office at a date undetermined. That
she
has not
didn't ask about the Oval Office. She asked about the UN. We'll be back right after this.
Dr. Hill, you have provided me probably the greatest piece of evidence that's before us to illustrate the problem with hearsay. So you said, based on questions and statements, I have heard some of you on this committee, that'd be us, appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country. And perhaps somehow, for some reason, it was Ukraine. So this is the, was held up by Devin Nunes. This is the report on Russian active measures that was voted on by all of us. It begins with this sentence. In 2015, Russia began engaging in a covert influence campaign aimed at the U.S. presidential election. Every one of us, a little small, like, effort on your part, Dr. Hill, and you would have known that what you just said was not true, what you had heard, but you felt the need to put it in your 8-page statement before you went on to tell us a bunch of other things that you heard about other people, no matter how convinced you were of, also which were not necessarily true. One of which was that you said that Ambassador Sondland met with Giuliani. Actually, Ambassador Sondland testified here that he had not, as ambassador, met with Giuliani. He'd briefly met him in his lifetime by shaking his hand. And Giuliani issued a statement that they had never met either. This is the problem with no matter how convinced we are, Dr. Hill. No matter how much we believe we know that what we've heard is true, it is still just what we've heard. But so far in this hearing, in these series of hearings, the only thing that we have is Volker saying, I spoke to the president and I've spoke to the Ukrainians, neither of which believed that aid was conditioned, neither of which believed the president was requiring it. And Ambassador Sondland, which said no one on the planet told him that that was the case. That's the sole evidence. Now, I got to tell you, the one thing that's interesting is Ambassador Sondland did say it's his belief that a meeting with the president was conditioned upon investigations. Ambassador Volker, who I think is a man of very significant integrity, said that that was not the case. Now, even if Ambassador Sondland is correct that somebody, and Dr. Hill, you testified, and again, it's hearsay, you don't know, that supposedly Mulvaney told him that, because he didn't testify to that. But let's say somebody beside the president told him that. You guys want to be the laughingstock of history to impeach a president of the United States because he didn't take a meeting? Oh, please, dear God.
That's why I keep saying I want the Democrats to keep pushing forward with this. I don't want them to give up. I don't want them to stop, Tom. I want them to keep going forward because the American people recognize, they see exactly what the Democrats are doing, what they're putting this country through. We're going to play a clip later on with Jim Jordan where he talks about how they are trying to destroy this nation, and no one cares. No one cares. The Democrats don't care, at least. They don't care. They hate this man so much, this single man, Trump, Tom, this single man. They hate him so much that they're willing to destroy this nation to get at him.
Well, I think you're also unintentionally right, perhaps, in saying that no one cares, because the ratings for the show trial every day of it has gone down and down and down. It's abysmal. You've got all the major networks cutting away from it. Today, we actually saw Ellen instead of the impeachment trial. So it just keeps going worse and worse and worse. Nobody cares. Nobody is interested in watching this play out. And I think it's because everybody knows the Democrats already have their conclusion. And they're not going to budge.
No, you're absolutely right. You know what? President Trump was guilty when they started this impeachment hearing, according to the Democrats. There was nothing anyone could present. The witnesses came forward. The witnesses said that, no, President Trump never told me to hold aid to the Ukrainians pending an investigation. That never took place. They constantly said it. And also, Tom, yesterday, who was it? It was Sondland yesterday, right? Sondland came out and he said, no, that never took place. President Trump never did that. And today, if I'm not mistaken, Holmes said that he heard on the telephone where Sondland was talking to President Trump. And he said, yes, hold the aid. So who's lying? Someone is lying. And someone's probably should go to jail for lying.
Roger Stone is going to be in jail for potentially 50 years for the crime of lying to Congress. It seems like you're right. I mean, one or potentially all of these people are lying. But an even more important point here is all of these witnesses are Democrat witnesses. Many of them are big fans of the Democrats. They were all coached by Shifty Adam Schiff. So they're all 100% controlled by the left. And yet this shows apparently the ineptitude of Adam Schiff, or just the fact that he knows he can get away away with it, and he's still going to get an impeachment vote in the House. But no, they're so inconsistent. They're contradicting each other from day to day. The first guy is contradicted by the second guy is contradicted by the third guy is contradicted by the fourth guy. And this is all Adam Schiff. You got to wonder, I mean, Adam, do you need some brain force? Do you need some turbo force? Your thinking appears to be very poor, my friend.
Exactly. So I was talking about Jim Jordan. So we're going to play this next video asking how come they didn't bring Holmes up first? Why didn't they bring him up like he's a star witness? Why didn't they bring him first? So let's go to that video with Jim Jordan.
Mr. Holmes, why didn't your boss talk about it?
What's that, sir?
Why didn't your boss bring up the call that you overheard? The reason you're here today. I mean, you're their closing witness, yet their star witness, their first witness, Ambassador Taylor, didn't even bring it up. And when we deposed you, you said this was extremely distinctive experience, one of the most remarkable events of my life. You described it like this. You said, after the call happens, I immediately told Deputy Chief of Mission and others at the embassy about the call. Then you said you went on vacation. You told several friends and family about the call. Then you come back on August 6th, and you tell Ambassador Taylor about the call. And then in your deposition statement, you said in your statement today as well, I repeatedly referred to the call in meetings and conversations where the issue of the president's interest in Ukraine was relevant. I repeatedly referred to the call in meetings and conversations where the issue of the president's interest in Ukraine was relevant. That sounds like government speak for you told everybody. Yet their star witness, their first witness, Ambassador Taylor, when he came here, he related 13 different conversations he had between July 18th when the aid is frozen, September 11th when it's released, 13 different conversations, never once mentioning this call. July 19th, Dr. Hill and Colonel Vindman told Taylor what Sondland told them. July 19th, Sondland told Taylor about the upcoming Trump-Zelensky call. July 20th, Sondland told Taylor what Sondland told Zelensky to tell Trump. July 20th, Dana Look tells Taylor what Zelensky told Dana Look. July 28th, Morrison tells Taylor what happened on the Trump-Zelensky call. August 16th, Volker tells Taylor what Yarmak told Volker. August 21st, Breckbull talks to Taylor. August 22nd, Morrison talks to Taylor. August 29th, Yarmak talks to Taylor. September 1st, Morrison tells Taylor what Sondland told Morrison about what Yarmak told Sondland. September 2nd, Morrison tells Taylor what Dana Look told Morrison. September 7th, Morrison tells Taylor what Sondland told Trump. And September 8th, Sondland tells Taylor what Trump told Sondland. Nowhere. Nowhere is there a Holmes tells Taylor what the president of the United States told Sondland.
May I answer 13 that question?
Conversations. Yeah, I'll get to you. I'll give you a chance here in a Thank second. You. But 13 conversations from their star witness. You're their closing witness. And he can't remember a call from a guy he works with every single day.
See, that's amazing. A call that he works with him every single day, but he can't remember. And this is what all this is about. Someone is lying.
I mean, I will, to be honest, I think that there are multiple people who are lying when it comes to this. And again, it totally shows the inconsistent narrative that the left is trying to put out. That means one of two things. One, either they're resigning themselves. They know they're not going to be able to impeach this guy. They're just throwing everything they have at the board and hoping something will stick, like we saw with the focus testing. Or perhaps the other possibility here is that they know they're going to convict, they know they're going to impeach regardless, and they don't care.
Right. They don't care. I mean, seriously, do they see what they're doing to this nation? But I think they do. And I think they're doing it intention because they want to break down the system. All right, we'll be back after this.
Forged in the fire of truth. Firepower with Will Johnson.
All right, so we have a special guest coming up with us. This is a young man. I met this young man in D.C. as well as in Georgia not too long ago, just a couple weeks ago. Chandler Crump. He's an up-and-coming young teenager, political commentator, and activist. Like I said, I've talked to him before, and he's actually taken the mega challenge. And we're going to bring him up, but we're going to play some of his video from his mega challenge for president and showing his support for President Trump, which I think is absolutely phenomenal. Can you imagine how leftist liberals feel when they see this, especially coming from the youth? I love it, every bit of it. Okay, let's watch this video, and then we're going to interview this young man.
Mega. We'll see. We'll see. Mega.
Don't touch my hat, so many have tried. You push your luck, I'll hit that stride. Not a tough guy, you'll find out soon. Don't push your luck, I'll clear that room. Kimmel got nerfed, he a black-faced clown. He skipped our bars, we put that down. MAGA is a movement in a state of mind. When Trump is gone, our sun still shines. We bring real change, you'll know our name. First step, ask, unleash those chains. Black folks are Trump, that's my word. I know my facts, I'm that nerd. A sign of change, Gen Z is here. Time moves fast, the end is near. I ain't done, the beat don't drop. Like P. Diddy, we just won't stop. They want impeachment, that's their song. Roger Stone did nothing wrong. Adam Schiff, he looks so confused. A pencil neck with no Blue's Clues. Read the script, there's no crime. Do nothing dims, wasting time. Sign that bill, new trade deal. Four more jobs, let's get real. They play games, we make plans. Drain that swamp, understand. We don't back down, you might get burned. Next year this time we on two terms. Still not a rapper, I do this for fun. We come together and love everyone. This MAGA crew is a major beast. Big ups to Bryson, I'm out, peace.
Hey, hey, touch my hand and you might get beat. These are Yeezys on my feet. Shade room, hate them, I'm sleep. Tell Jimmy Kimmel that his show weak. And they lost in 2016. You know what that mean? They gonna try to impeach. See, I talk about white supremacy, right, but awesome, we shooting each other awesome down in these streets. I'm tired of all these pseudo intellectuals. If you don't know
Chandler
politics, but on
so Chandler's a young man. That's Bryson right now that's on the screen. He's the one that actually started the whole mega challenge. And like I said, I love every bit of it because, see, black people aren't supposed to do this according to the Democrats. You're not supposed to do this, especially if you're a young black male. So, Chandler, thank you for coming on with us. Thank you for sharing this. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing the challenge. I love every bit of it. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Will. So happy to be on. So happy to have done that song right there. The song's actually called Pro-Life, Pro-God, Pro-Trump. It's by Bryson. I made a remix of it. It's actually not a MAGA challenge, but I did also make a MAGA challenge way back in September when it was first getting off. I was very happy to see President Trump retweet that. And once again, I'm happy to be on this show.
Awesome. I'm glad to have you here. So tell us, what made you start speaking out? What made you become an activist and start supporting President Trump?
Okay, so thank you. First of all, thank you so much for that question. It's a great one. I attended Turning Point USA's Young Black Leadership Summit in 2018. And after seeing Candace Owens and a lot of the people speaking there, I realized that I can speak my mind and speak what I have to say out into the public without having to deal with any of that backlash. And if I dealt with it, well, I would deal with it. I would accept it. And so I got on the scene. I started my Twitter account the day that YBLS ended in 2018. And ever since then, I've been running my YouTube channel, running my Twitter, running my Instagram, all giving out my own thoughts, giving my own opinion on political events, informing others about political events. But my whole main goal, my end goal, is to inspire Generation Z to get more politically active. And when I went to BLS 2019, which was a couple months ago, I met this kid, and he told me that he got inspired to get out and make his voice heard in politics because he heard me speaking my voice. And I think within the next few months, you're going to see a lot more younger people coming out in support of the president or in support of free thought, not even in the support of president, but just in support of thinking for themselves, speaking for themselves, because you see other young people out here speaking their mind and getting their truth out.
That's awesome.
That really is. Thanks again for coming on. And you are extremely well-spoken. You're making me feel very, very old here. So I'm just kind of curious, how and when did you get on the Trump train?
So I got on the Trump train actually after the election, before the election. Well, I've got a long history of kind of flip-flopping my ideal, sort of. But during the 2016 election, I was a Ben Carson kid, and then he dropped out, and I was kind of flip-flopping between Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. But after the election, because none of the candidates I wanted got there, and I was pretty unhappy to see Trump get there because I thought he was crazy. Honestly, I thought a lot of the things he said was bad. But like, after the election, because I didn't really want Hillary to win either, because I never liked Hillary, to be honest. But after the election, I saw all the slander and the news coming from both sides, from CNN, MSNBC, and even in some cases Fox and some of the local radio show hosts in Atlanta. After seeing all the lies and the libel against him, libel, slander, all of that, I was like, wow, maybe I should do some research on my own instead of getting spoon-fed this information from these mass media sources. And so I did my own research, saw the things he did back in the 90s to help black people, saw all the amazing things he's done in the past. And then I just kind of sat and watched the things doing that he did during his term, during his administration. He's done amazing things for black people with the First Step Act, the unemployment, all that. And so seeing that kind of thing just kind of inspired me to at least look into the information myself and kind of red pill myself.
That's awesome. You know, to be your age and to see young men like you that's, you know, recognizing what the country is going through and headed, what is it like in your circle, in your realm, with other youth, seeing that you creating these videos? Do you get any backlash from it? Do they say anything to you? Because on some of your videos, you actually touch on some hot topic buttons, like the LGBTQP.
Yeah.
You talk about the terrorists. You talk about Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
So do you get any retaliation? Do you get anyone that's like attacking you, or is it just, you know, support in what you're doing?
Okay, so there's a lot of different layers to things, and it's kind of a difficult question to answer. To be blunt, yes, I have gotten backlash. Whether I know it's from people within my generation, I'm not 100% sure. Online, I've definitely gotten some backlash. To be clear, so at the high school, at my nearby high school that I'm supposed to be going to, the kids at the school, they found my MAGA challenge, the original MAGA challenge, and they've been clowning me about it. And so that's what's going on there, but I'm not really dealing with that. And so in a physical sense, I'm not really getting much backlash. But on my MAGA Challenge post on Instagram, I've been getting a ton of backlash on there. So in a way, yes, I am getting backlash. But I don't really know if it's from kids in my generation. And if you'd like to, like, get more deep into that question, I think I can answer it better with a less broad question if you'd like.
I think that was good.
You are definitely a very smart kid. I mean, years ahead of your age. I'm just curious, you know, very good parenting. Is something good in the water? How on earth did you become so wise at your age?
Okay, so this is my favorite thing to say. But if you want your child to be a free thinker, or if you want your child to be successful in life, keep both the mother and the father in the house. Okay, that's one of the most important things. Those are the two pillars, okay? So some may say, oh, you don't really need the man, and, you know, that's not true at all. The man always leads to a good child. Some may say you don't need the woman, which, you know, there's not as much science behind it. But honestly, I'd say have both in the household, because you want your child to have mostly logic, but they can't be just logical robots. You want your child to have an equal mix of emotion, but they can't just be 100% emotional, or you'll be having your child get shot up at Popeyes for trying to get a sandwich because they got emotional because their sandwich took too long. You want to have that equal mix of both emotion and logic. You want a strong father who can provide you the logic you need to survive in life, and a strong mother who can provide you the emotion in life to be able to understand the emotions that other people are giving off, and then use your logic to navigate that. It's very important that you have both in the household. So that's my answer for that.
Very good answer. I mean, excellent answer. And I can imagine any progressives, any leftists that's watching this probably upset because you're actually getting it at your age, and they're probably saying shame on your parents for doing such a wonderful job. I mean, sadly, that's the world we live in. I went to an event just the other day, and the progressives don't believe that, you know, the Democrats have been encouraging women, specifically black women, to remove the father from the household. But they want to completely disregard the ghettos and the projects and all of the fighting that goes on, like in Chicago, where black crime is like at an all-time rate. So when we come back, we're going to ask some questions about how your response or how you're reaching the youth. And is you reaching the youth something that you really want to tackle? So when we come back, we're going to talk to Chandler even more. Yeah, the youth is where it's at. And you can imagine how the Democrats feel seeing the youth being this way. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Fan.video.
Welcome back to Firepower. I'm Tom Pappard, co-hosting with Will Johnson. Our guest is Chandler Crump. You can follow him on Twitter at Real C Crump. And he is a very, very bright, bright individual. Thanks again for coming on the show with us. So Will was wanting to kind of go into your activism, and you mentioned that you really want to reach out to Generation Z, the Zoomers, and tell them that not only is it okay to get involved with politics, it is okay to vote for the vile Orange Man. Orange Man bad, of course. So I want to kind of ask you, and I hope I don't stomp on Will's toes too badly here, but I kind of want to ask you, what has your success been like? Are you getting a bunch of kids in your age range that are coming around and seeing that it's okay to be in politics, and it's not always boring, and sometimes we have a whole hell of a lot of fun? Or has it been kind of limited results?
So it's a little bit of a struggle to get to Generation Z, because a lot of them do think that politics is kind of boring, and those of them that don't think it's boring are generally on the left side of politics, and they think they're fighting for social justice and that this is their World War II and that they're marching on Washington, even though they're really just arguing on Twitter about why Chick-fil-A is racist. So I've had some mixed results, but I'm definitely working very hard to get to the high schools, get to the campuses, and really speak directly to them. So I'm working on a few things in relation to that. But I think you need to be firing on all cylinders when it comes to the cyber world, getting on Twitter, Instagram, and yes, even TikTok. You need to get to where they're paying attention and get on there and speak what you need to say, because free thought is a movement. Kanye West said free thought. Candace Owens said free thought. We're here saying free thought, and Generation Z is starting to listen. Their ears are perking up.
Nice. And you're not stepping on my toes, Tom. I mean, it's an excellent question. Let me ask you this, because you're the youth. What are your views about the whole climate, Green New Deal? Because AOC, she's actually reaching the youth.
Yeah.
That's why Bernie Sanders is using her.
Yeah.
So what are your views on the climate change that the left is pushing?
Okay, so before I get to my views, I actually want to say that the whole movements with the youth is another thing that's really inspiring me to get there. So you have the Greta Thunbergs and some of her associates, and it seems like every Twitter account you go to, they have their own organization advocating for the Green New Deal or advocating for climate change and this or that. And that really inspires me to get out there, because I know us on the right, we don't really have the same thing going. We don't have a ton of youth organizations going. And so I'm definitely working on getting, a lot more things on the right going when it comes to the youth, a lot of free thought organizations down there in the field. So when it comes to climate change myself, I have sort of an interesting view on it. And so I do think that the climate does change, but I think it has changed for like the ice ages. I believe it's a normal thing with our planet. Mm-hmm. It's a cycle of hundreds of millions of years going. And of course you have the various weather patterns like El Nino and La Nina, all those various things that kind of come into play. I don't think the human race can do enough to move the climate like that when it comes to carbon emissions. And sure, I mean, I may try to recycle this or that every once in a while, but when you try to replace my plastic straws for paper straws that dissolve in my mouth and they make my drink taste terrible, it's kind of overstepping it. The Green New Deal will destroy our country and in turn destroy pretty much the world, because a lot of the world revolves around the economy of the United States of America. And so it's kind of detrimental to our society, and Generation Z is buying it. And so we definitely need to step up and figure a way around that.
That is very important and very depressing to think that the kids are buying into this. But you brought up something that's very, very important, I think, which is that the left, they kind of throw all these kids in front of the camera. And then if you criticize these young people, then you're attacking a child. And it doesn't seem like anybody is pushing you into this. I really appreciate that you went to an event and you decided that you wanted to use your voice. So I kind of just want to ask your thoughts. I mean, I'm sure you've gotten tons of leftists on Twitter and elsewhere attacking you, saying vile things about you. Do you think that this is a double standard where it's like people criticize David Hoggler, they would get banned off the internet. But then when it's a right wing person, they can be criticized. Give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So it is most definitely a double standard. You guys remember Minnie AOC, the little girl that parodied as AOC? I believe one of her accounts got banned off of Twitter for impersonation, even though it was very clearly a parody. I mean, she's like, 20, 30 years younger than the real AOC? Although looking at the way they both talk, you really couldn't tell. Either way, all I know is that it is most definitely a double standard. As you have kids like me, a lot of younger people on the right out there speaking their minds, and they can get criticized left and right all the way around the world. But then you have one tweet criticizing David Hogg or Greta Thunberg, and all of a sudden you're a racist, sexist, Islamophobic, homophobic, transphobic, biphobic, this, that, and the other. All of it. It's most definitely a double standard. And I definitely think that when you have these youths getting out there and speaking to other youth, it will start to kind of shift to that double standard so much so that it probably won't be a double standard anymore. I don't think it'll be there.
Yeah, so you're probably, I don't know, I'm just curious, have you been watching any of the impeachment?
Okay, so
just if you have, just kind of like break down your opinion on it.
I'm going to be honest. All I've seen is just kind of like the trends on Twitter, because I'm pretty sure I speak for most of Generation Z. We are not paying attention to that. I believe most of Generation Z mostly really thinks, yeah, impeachment's not going to happen. And those on the left that do think impeachment will happen, they know deep within themselves it's not going to happen, and their best bet is 2020 or in 2024 when they push their next random candidate. In all honesty, Generation Z is not paying attention to the impeachment hearings.
See, that's kind of the answer what I was anticipating, because, I mean, most of the adults are not even paying attention to it. Tom even talked about it earlier, how it's like their numbers just dwindling because people are, like, watching something else because they already have the verdict out what they want to do to President Trump. Sorry, Tom.
No, you're fine. And I think, thank you so much for saying that. I've been saying, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's very life or death. It is the future of our country here. But I've been saying for weeks now, it's boring. Nobody cares. It's just, we have to talk about the craziness every single night because somebody has to, but it's so boring. So with that said, I mean, I think what you're saying here is the way to reach young people, Generation Z, is not to go out and do what the cable news guys, even on the right, do and say, look at this crazy, wacky thing a Democrat said. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Ah, yes, we are with Trump. So what is the right way? How do we engage with culture and reach young people?
So the Own the Libs era is over, okay? We don't really need, you know, triggering libs compilations on YouTube anymore. That's not how we're reaching the youth. You need to get to where they're actually listening. That's on TikTok, Instagram. You need to get out there and you need to not only show how crazy things are and show people kind of dismantling the logic of the left, but you need to show what happens when, you know, the left gets control of a country. So keep showing Venezuela, keep showing Hong Kong, keep showing the atrocities in the Soviet Union and other places where communism caused genocide. Keep showing what will happen and show these predictions of what will happen to America when these things they support actually start to take power and kind of dismantle the American economy. Show the various cities in America that basically shut down during the Obama administration because taxes were too high, because they just couldn't finance themselves and get their country moving, get their business moving, all because of that administration. Show those things and really expose to Generation Z that, you know, if you're thinking a little differently, you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with that. Kanye West is out here and he's saying all these amazing things and now he's devoting himself to God. And so Generation Z, and I've seen it on these platforms, Kanye West devotes himself to God and now all of a sudden Generation Z is like, well, you know what? Maybe God isn't that bad. Am I right? And so you have these, and I'm not saying that we should rely on celebrities for our opinions, but I'm definitely saying that when you have people out here that influence thought, they influence thought. You need to get those people out there to expose the things that are happening on the left, expose what can and will happen on the left, and just kind of give it to us straight.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think God uses people that are imperfect. I'm one of them. I'm imperfect. Kanye West, he's not perfect. No one's perfect. But I think what Kanye is doing, he's bringing attention and he's getting people to think, just like you said, about God. Let me ask you, so when you having conversations with different people and you know, in the youth, and they tell you that President Trump is racist, what is your response to them? And they say, how do you support a racist? Because I know you've heard that.
Okay, so I kind of, in my head, I play a little game of roulette and pick which response I give. So sometimes I say, if he's a racist, then why did he invite, you know, around 600 or 400 young black leaders to the White House? If he's a racist, then why did he get an award alongside Muhammad Ali and Rosa Parks at the same time as them for supporting black business? If he's such a racist, then why has he done this and that, you know, lowered black unemployment? Why did he donate a large sum of money to historically black college universities, all HBCUs? Why did he give so much money to them if he's such a racist? You know, there's just a multitude of different answers you could give to sort of combat that claim. But no matter what, so they'll always be like, but he's still a racist. You know, he was just playing the act and all that. It's kind of hard to get through to them.
So tell everyone, because we're going to run out to a minute. Go ahead and tell everyone how they can connect with you and find more information about you.
All right. So you can subscribe to my YouTube channel on YouTube. It's just Chandler Crump. You can follow my Facebook page. You can look that up on Facebook, Chandler Crump. Follow me on Instagram at Chandler.Crump. And like Tom said earlier on Twitter, I'm at Real C Crump.
Awesome, awesome. You know what? I'm looking forward to see your future. And I can probably possibly see you being a politician when you get older. And you know what? Tell your dad I said hi. And you know what? Tell your dad, very good job, Dad. Is he in the room?
No, he's not.
Okay, well, tell your dad I said very good job. Very good job.
Thank you.
All right, take
care. Hope to be on your show again, Will.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Take care. All right, everyone. See, that's the youth. That is the youth. I love it. I love it. I don't know what else to say. I just love the youth is waking up. The Democrats don't like it. And if the Democrats don't like it, I love it. We'll be back.
And Dr. Hill, you told us during your deposition that indeed that there are perceived conflict of interest troubles when the child of a government official is involved with something that government official has an official policy role in, correct?
I think any family member of any member of the U.S. government, Congress, or the Senate is open to all kinds of questions about optics and of perhaps undue outside influence if they take part in any kind of activity that could be misconstrued as being related to their parent or other family member's work. So as a matter of course, yes, I do think that's the case.
So it can be conflict of interest. Really? Right? I mean, people really should ask themselves, how come they're not talking about the conflict of interest with Hunter Biden, Tom? Why is there not a conflict of interest there?
I mean, the entire Democrat Party and a few Republicans, everybody appears to be doing business in Ukraine. I don't think Americans realize what a great business opportunity Ukraine apparently was during the Obama years. I mean, everybody seemed to have an energy company in Ukraine. We have a relative of Mitt Romney, a relative of John Kerry, a relative of Joe Biden, a relative of Nancy Pelosi. Everybody's doing business in Ukraine. I had no idea that this war-torn, corrupt country, Russia literally invaded it under Obama's watch. I had no earthly idea there was so much money in this country. Will, I think we should move band.video to Ukraine immediately.
I like that. We can start an energy company called Energy Band.video. Band.video Energy. I don't know. We'll make something up. We'll get government subsidies so we can push it along. And no one should say anything. So we have another video. This is today where they actually mention Roger Stone and Alex Jones at the impeachment hearings. Isn't it kind of something how they, some kind of way they bring into it? Because to my understanding, she actually did work with George Soros. So let's go to this video clip where I think she denies it, if I'm not mistaken, but let's just go to it.
Dr. Hill, you stated in your deposition you've been accused of being a mole for George Soros in the White House, correct?
That's correct.
You said in your deposition, specifically, a conspiracy was launched against you by convicted felon Roger Stone on the show InfoWars, led by Alex Jones, right?
I don't think he was a convicted felon at the time that he launched this, so I didn't use those exact words. But it was indeed Roger Stone and Alex Jones on InfoWars in 2017. And in fact, just more recently, before Mr. Stone was endured his trial, they were at it again, reprising the same InfoWars video and adding embellishments.
And they said, I'll quote what they said about you. We here at InfoWars, this is Roger Stone speaking, first identified Fiona Hill, the globalist leftist George Soros insider who had infiltrated McMaster's staff. He said that on May 31st, 2017. I presume you're not a globalist, leftist, Soros insider, correct?
I think my coal mining family would be very surprised to hear all of these things about me.
I agree.
Actually, leftist, perhaps not so much, but, you know, anyway, the left in Europe is a bit different from the left here, let's put it that way.
I agree. interestingly, you stated in your deposition that a similar conspiracy theory had actually been launched against Marie Yovanovitch.
That's correct.
And you said specifically, when I saw this happening to Ambassador Yovanovitch, again, I was furious because this is, again, just this whipping up of what is frankly an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory about George Soros to basically target nonpartisan career officials. Isn't that what you said?
I did say that, yes.
And I'm sure you've been watching with concern what's happened to other nonpartisan career officials. We had Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, an American immigrant, questioned for his criticism of the president.
I'm sorry, Will, but I just have to note George Soros famously referred to his time rounding up Jews in Hungary during Nazi Germany. That was happy time. Happy time. So now it's an anti-Semitic thing if you point out this woman's connections to Soros, who said the Holocaust was happy time.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And then they push it out like none of it's actually real. It's amazing. It is really amazing. All right, we'll be back after this.
Firepower with Will Johnson.
All right, welcome back. Firepowernews.com, band.video. Of course, band.video. So this next young lady we have on with us, she's been on with us before, and she has all the goods, all the information on what the left is doing and a lot of the Islamic movements, Ilhan Omar and different things like that. Marnie Hockenberg. She's a Jexit conservative, Minneapolis-based patriot, political activist. She's a leader of Mega Soda. I love that. I love that phrase, Mega Soda, one of the largest networks of Mega Soda, Minnesota Trump supporters. So, Marnie, thank you again for coming back on with us.
Hi, Will. Thank you so much for having me back on. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely awesome. I love your insight and your videos and how you just break everything down. And to my understanding, so you sent over a PDF, actually, and I didn't get to go through it the way I wanted to, but one of the things that caught my eye is that you've been removed, and I didn't even realize you've been removed from Twitter. Is that correct?
I was permanently suspended from Twitter.
And now when I watch your videos, I've yet to see you use foul language. I've yet to see you call for violence towards someone. I've yet to see you show child pornography. I've yet to see you do anything that would possibly violate the community standards, except for you spoke the truth and voiced your opinion. Did they do it for that reason?
That's right. Well, I spoke out against Ilhan Omar, or Ilhan Elmi, shall we say, and CARE and Sharia. And so I got permanently suspended for literally just telling my opinion about Ilhan Omar and Hamas doing business as CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, and Sharia law. And so they permanently suspended me from Twitter. But of course, that comes as no surprise to anybody, or particularly conservatives. And this was right around the election. So I must have been really making a difference for them to notice and then permanently suspend me from speaking my mind. What about my First Amendment right?
Wow,
that is definitely par for the course when it comes to our Silicon Valley overlords. Thanks again, Marnie, for coming back on the show. So Ilhan Omar, somebody who repeatedly has made anybody with a brain would consider anti-Semitic comments, along with other members of the squad. I just want to ask you, today we saw in Congress, our sponsor, Alex Jones, Infowars.com, was accused of anti-Semitism for pointing out that George Soros has an undue amount of influence over American politics and is forcing us all to adopt leftism. So how, first of all, do you consider that an anti-Semitic thing to say? And then second of all, how is it that the right is constantly framed for anti-Semitism while we let people like Ilhan Omar go about their merry day spouting Jew hatred as much as they like?
Well, you know, we have to understand that the media right these days is literally the mouthpiece of the Marxist Party or the Democrat Party. And the Marxist Party is very anti-Semitic, and they've partnered up with the global Islamic movement, the Sharia adherents, if you will, to tamp down anything that we say that would be the truth about Islam. And then, of course, when we go talking about Judaism or Israel or something like that, they don't like, and they are very anti-Semitic and anti-Christian and anti-white, I might add, then they clamp us down. And that's literally what we might call a total censorship of the truth. And we are in their crosshairs because they literally own the media.
Wow. So just the other week, Obama came out and said that the left is going too far left. Did you see that?
I did.
Okay, so Obama said that the left is going too far left, and then to my understanding, Ilhan Omar came out and said that she's not far left. Did you see that as well?
I did.
So, you know, to an extent, she might be onto something, you know, but then again, I don't know. Well, let me get your professional opinion on it, because the reason what I'm talking about is that she says she's not so far left, meaning that maybe she doesn't go with homosexuality because, you know, the Muslim world, they will throw homosexuals off of buildings. So maybe she's referring to that, meaning she's not so far left, saying that, hey, once we get Sharia in America, we're going to throw all you gay people off the building. I mean.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's called it wackadoodle, you know. But do we believe anything that Ilhan Omar says? You know, she is so hateful. She is literally a hateful person. And she denies anything that we call her out on. And she's in her own little bubble, her own little Sharia bubble, if you will. And her brother is gay, which is really astounding. So, you know, how does that work out for him in under Sharia? So
the
I don't
same
know.
Same way she married?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow, that's wow. just really weird.
Welcome, I did not
to
know
our
that.
World here in Minnesota.
How does that work?
Keep track of yeah, it. You know, catch up.
That is truly bizarre. I did not know that little facet. That is actually news to me as well. That kind of spoils my next question. I kind of want to get baffled here. So let's talk about kind of homosexuality in Islam for just a moment. We all know that in a lot of these countries, these fundamental Islamist countries, they don't practice necessarily homosexuality, but pedophilia, where they rape little boys and they somehow think that's okay. I mean, obviously, I don't want us to say anything that'll get us in trouble, but is that kind of what her brother may be into, or is he just an out and proud homosexual?
I don't have a video camera set up in his apartment, so I don't know what he does in his private life. But if you look at his social media, you can definitely come to that kind of a conclusion. Let's just leave it at that. But under Sharia, rape is legal, rape of little girls and women. And we all know what they do to young boys in, say, Afghanistan, shall we say. And that is perfectly okay with them. And of course, homosexuality is a punishable offense by death under Islam. And look what they do to gay people in Gaza and Iran. They hang them from cranes. They throw them off buildings, right? So you've got the weird thing is that you've got the gay community here cozying up with the Sharia adherents, right? Do they not understand what the Quran says about gays? But that's their intersectionality, where they can partner up, even though they're diametrically opposed, and actually one group of people will kill another group. The Sharia adherents will kill the gays because it is a punishable offense under Islam. But in order to promote their agenda and thrust these two totalitarian ideologies down our throats, they will come together and partner up for the time being.
You know, I think the left understanding what they're doing is a anomaly. I mean, because for them to support, you know, the very thing that's been killing a lot of, the gay people in the gay community, and they openly support and they're like, oh, yeah, we need to support them. We need to be compassionate to them. We need to show them love as they're throwing them off the building.
Exactly. You know,
it blows one's mind, you know, just like I can't grasp it personally. And, you know, just because when you have someone that's like yourself, Tom, and we have rational thinking and we put two and two together and we all realize 2 + 2 = 4 and everything else is just like, okay, you can't make it be something else. But the Democrats, the left, they have come to a state on the planet. It's not just America, but on the planet to where they think that, you know, you can just throw anything out there and you can be whatever it is you want to be. And it's just how they're doing the children and how they're just implementing all of these policies onto the rest of us. And then you're Islamophobic, you're homophobic if you don't agree with their insanity. See how I make that rhyme? It's crazy. So when we come back from the break, I want to ask you a little bit more about the left being too far left. And, you know, according to their Lord and Savior, Barack Hussein Obama, okay? All right, so when we come back, we're going to talk to Marnie Hockenberg. She's very insightful in everything Islam was going on. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Firepower. I'm Tom Papert, co-hosting here with Will Johnson. Our guest is Marnie Hockenberg. I would say you can find her on Twitter, but she was banned for daring to tell the truth about Ilhan Omar. You can find her, of course, on YouTube still, where she puts out some phenomenal videos. So, Marnie, I've been dying to ask you about this. I think this happened between the time you were on last and now. There was kind of a viral poster campaign recently that I honestly have no idea what the intentions were, but it seems like it was to try to get people to learn a little bit more about Islam. And it was the posters were very simple. It was just black text on a white piece of paper that said, Islam is right about women. So give your thoughts on this. How are women treated in Islam? And have you heard about this kind of poster campaign?
Tom, yes, I have heard about, I saw the posters. And first of all, I think it's a brilliant idea. Whoever thought of doing that, I give them a lot of credit. Because what does that do? It makes you think. Like, Islam is right about women. Oh, wait a minute. Islam doesn't treat women well at all, and women are second-class citizens under Islam. And are they right? But then, if you're a leftist, if you're a lefty, then you are the kind of person that will try to make excuses for Islam or think that Islam is just great. It's kind of a break it thinking. So I think whoever did that is great. Women are literally second-class citizens under Sharia. They are the lowest of the low. A man can have up to four wives. Women can be, a rape is legal under Sharia. If a woman is raped, she has to have four male witnesses. Like, that's going to happen. Female genital mutilation, you can marry a girl when she's six. Pedophilia, I mean, on and on. Women are literally they're lesser than animals under Sharia.
So everything you're saying here is true, but yet then they want to remove you and ban you because what you're saying is true. It brings me to this. If you're doing something that is wrong, let me do it like this. Let's say you're doing something that's right in your eyes, and then you come along and you talk about it, then why should you be banned for that?
Well, you shouldn't, right? Under normal circumstances in our world, in the conservative world, we actually have free speech. We have a constitution, right? And we can speak our mind because we live in America. But when you have the Marxists and the jihadis aligned, and they now literally own big tech, it's Shariaville, if you will, Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. and you've got entities like Hamas doing business as CARE, going into Twitter headquarters and banning people like Laura Loomer. She is absolutely banned on all social media because she tells the truth about Islam and Ilhan Omar. They have captured the narrative, and that is what the left and the jihadis have done. That happened to me on Twitter. It has happened to a lot of people. Look at Facebook. I mean, I'm still amazed that I still have my YouTube channel up. But this is total censorship. And I will call it Islamic blasphemy laws being enacted right here in America. This is Sharia in America. It's egregious, wow. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it's one of the most insane things. And you pointed something out, which I think what you were referring to is that Saudi Arabia now owns more of Twitter.com than Jack Dorsey, the founder, which is absolutely, it boggles the mind how this has been allowed to happen. Will, you were kind of hinting at Obama saying that the left is going too far left here recently. And I wanted to ask you, expand on that a little bit, Marnie. We're seeing the squad, AOC, Ilhan Omar, all of these people saying, we're not even that far left. And I'm wondering, what do you think would be far left to them? Meaning, what do you think their preferable situation? What is their preferable society? How does this shake out when we have the LGBT shaking hands with Islam for the purpose of destroying conservative America? What is their utopia, do you think?
And Marty, let me tag on to Tom's question there, because it's really good what he was leading to. I have a list of things here. Because so if being a hashtag, I'm saying hashtag far too left, meaning healthcare is human rights, right? I guess that's far too far left. Future generations should live a healthy planet where our children, students shouldn't have debt for school, that's far too left. Minimum wage at $15 an hour, that's far too left. living with the, you know, depending if you can have gun or not, I guess that's far too left. And then you have families don't belong in cages. That's, you know, far too left. I mean, so why not count us in, right? That's what she's saying, right? Look at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're just soft pedaling. She's soft pedaling a combination of Sharia and Marxism, a total one world order or government control of all aspects of our life, because that's what the left wants ultimately, right? They want the government to control everything. And under Sharia, everything is dictated by the Islamic doctrine, by what Muhammad and Allah, you know, what all those Islamic laws are. That's their respective versions of utopia. So to them, that would not be too far left, because that would be, that's normal to them. That's what they want. To us, that's way too far left. That's crazy. And that's against our Constitution. They want to rip our Constitution into shreds. And they want to control us. And that's their goal when they work together. So I don't know if she says it's not too far left, because that's normal to her. That's what they want. They want total control over us. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, absolutely. And I had to piggyback on Tom's question there, because, I mean, it went hand in hand. It's, you know, because all the stuff that they're pushing is far left. And, I mean, she's the extreme, just like Ilhan Omar, AOC, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, you know, Joe Biden. They're all far left. So I want to thank you for coming on with us. I love when you come on and give your insight on all of this. And with myself and Tom, tell everybody, and I guess we have like 60 seconds here, tell everybody how they can connect with you, because, you know, with all the censorship and stuff going on, people need to know how they can connect with you, newsletter, whatever it is you have.
Great. Well, thank you, Will and Tom. I so appreciate the opportunity to come on here. You can find me on YouTube, Marnie Hockenberg. And as long as I'll be up there, I'll be making those videos. And I do report on the literal Marxist counterstate and the Islamic counterstate takeover of Minnesota. So tune in. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Marnie Hockenberg. I want to thank you so much for coming on with us. You know, the time just flies, and I would love to bring you back on again in the future. And we need to do some more. You know, we need one day when I come up there, we'll do a video together.
That would be great. Oh, my gosh. That would be great. So come on. I got it all set up for you. I'll take you all around town. It'll be incredible what we're going to do.
Yeah, that would be awesome. It would be awesome.
Okay.
All right, cool. Thank you. All right. Band.video, everybody. Band.video, firepowernews.com. We'll be back after this.
Real news, real people, real politics. This is Firepower.
All right, welcome back. Okay, so while we were in the break, Tom, the awesome crew here, and I'm kind of getting off our programming here, but our awesome crew actually went out and found Fiona Hill's resume. And you know, so the video earlier where she was talking about like all the conspiracy theorists and all this, saying that you're a George Soros mole insider in the White House. Well, guess what? I can't say it's a simple Google search, but the guys, the production crew here are very good. They actually went out and found her resume and printed out a copy for us. And lo and behold, if you go to some of the advisory boards and professional groups that she was a part of, what do we have here? Open Society Institute in New York from 2000-2006. So, are you questioning anyone that's listening and watching right now? What is this Open Society Institute New York? So if you do a simple Google search on that, can you guys bring that up? If you bring that up, guess what you find out? It is George Soros Foundation. So did she lie again? Right there, that is a blatant lie. she went along with that she has nothing to do with George Soros. Never have.
Well, I think that the crux of this is that InfoWars is tomorrow's news today. It's the tip of the spear. This was 2+ years ago. InfoWars exposed this very strong jawed woman. I mean, my God, I would kill to have a jaw like that. I don't know, poor lady. But they exposed that she was a Soros mole within the Trump administration. Now she's before Congress. They're talking about InfoWars. They're obviously deathly afraid of InfoWars. They're obviously deathly afraid of Alex Jones, because they exposed this witch for being a Soros-controlled puppet. That's what she is. And she was working in the executive branch of the Trump administration. I mean, this is horrifying, horrifying information. And of course, it fits perfectly that the Democrats should trot out a Soros plant to try to impeach the president. You might as well, why don't we just call George Soros to these hearings? Yes, I heard that when I was not making happy time with the Jews and the killing of the Jews, I decided to put Fiona Hill in there so she could destroy Trump. I mean, that's what this is. This is a Soros operation as far as I'm concerned.
That's 100% what this is. I mean, George Soros, I don't know if you recall, Tom, but there was a video maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago from now. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. But there was a video where George Soros was saying that Trump wasn't going to make it to 2020. And he's going to do everything he can to prevent Trump from winning in 2020. And it looks like he's working at it really hard. So, but anyways, it's just very good. Thank you guys in the control room.
Yeah, great production job.
Team,
great job.
Production team for finding the information. There it is right there. Her resume right there. She's a part of it. So what he said was true. Anyway, so Tulsi Gabbard, you remember a while back when she... she's probably not going to be allowed back on stage, Tom. Tulsi Gabbard's probably not going to be allowed back on stage when it comes to these Democrat debates. And the reason why I say that is because I think she knew what she was doing when she said this video that we're getting ready to play. She knew. She had to know that, okay, she's getting ready to say something that everybody in the crowd is going to be butthurt, even the liberal media, the ones that are on stage with her, because she actually told the truth. And they didn't want to hear it. And I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. So let's play the video and then we'll talk more about it.
Our Democratic Party, unfortunately, is not the party that is of, by, and for the people. It is a party that has been and continues to be influenced by the foreign policy establishment in Washington, represented by Hillary Clinton and others' foreign policy, by the military-industrial complex and other greedy corporate interests.
There it is. And you know what? They're going to say, okay, you know what? No more. Write her off. No more. Well, she's done.
They tried that before. I mean, you're right, though. And first of all, Tulsi, if you're watching this broadcast, you cannot play both sides here. Tulsi Gabbard, of course, came out in favor of impeaching President Donald Trump. Now, at the same time, she calls her colleagues, who she's in lockstep for, she is essentially calling them tools of the foreign policy military-industrial complex, which they are. But it seems like, I think you're right, Will. I think that she's trying to play both sides. She's trying to play with the party enough so they will let her go forward with her campaign. But at the same time, she's trying to be an insurgent candidate who is not going to follow the party orthodoxy. And so now you're right. This type of statement where she's essentially correctly calling everyone else on that stage a shill for big government, that's going to get her excommunicated. They're going to do everything they can to destroy what's left of her fledgling campaign.
No, absolutely. I mean, she's already fighting Google. She's already fighting the other ones. And a lot of people saying that she's just a plant to make it look like she's, you know, likable and that she's trying to pull us in. You just alluded to it. And but you know what? She's willing to drop her morals to, please a few on the left. So, I mean, even though she's a very attractive lady, I'm not going to vote for her. I still wouldn't vote for her. I mean, I can care less how attractive she is. I'm not going to vote for her. The problem is that she's willing to give up everything that is decent to try to make the left happy. But see, it's not even working. That's not working. That's why she came out and talking about the truth about the Democrats. So we have another video here, Tom. This is with our Yang. I think he is it Yang or the Yin Yang? Which one is he? I mean, he's,
I only know he goes by Yang.
Which one? I guess which one is the evil one on the yin yang? The yang is the evil part. I don't know. I'm just saying it. So we have another one where he's talking about the country turn our boys into healthy, strong young men when, you know, they want to change what it is to be a young man. This, I mean, really? 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 Okay, let's go through it.
Mr. Yang, what would you do about the issue of white supremacist violence?
Well, first, we have to designate white supremacist terrorism as domestic terrorism so that the Department of Justice can properly measure it. I talked to an anti-hate activist named Christian Picciolini, who told me about how he was radicalized over a 10-year period. He said he was a lonely 14-year-old and that he was reached out to by a hate group and he wound up joining it for a decade. Now he's out and he's helping convert people out of those hate groups and back into the rest of society. But what he told me was that if anyone had reached out to him when he was that hurt, broken 14-year-old boy, he would have gone with them. He said, if it had been a coach, I would have gone with him. If it had been a mentor, a teacher, I would have gone with them. But instead, it was a hate group. So what we have to do is we have to get into the roots of our communities and create paths forward for men in particular who right now are falling through the cracks. And when you look at gun violence in this country, 96%+ of the shooters we're talking about are young boys and young men. We have to, as a country, start finding ways to turn our boys into healthy, strong young men who do not hate, but instead feel like they have paths forward in today's economy.
So is he going to address the issue of Antifa? Because a lot of them are the youth, right? They've been indoctrinating Antifa to go out and attack people. And if you want to talk about white supremacists, majority of the people in Antifa are white, Tom.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, what he said, I wanted to like, but the premise was so preposterous. I mean, I've done the research. You look at these examples of so-called white nationalist, white supremacist terrorism. They count like a KKK member beats his wife because she was cheating on him. Oh, white supremacist terrorism at work in America. I mean, it's such total and complete insanity. And I think to your point, Will, yeah, we need to reach out to these little Antifa kids before they go off the rocker and they start beating people up for trying to go see an Ann Coulter speech. That's the real crisis in this country. And of course, the left isn't going to bring it up, but it's a white supremacy, violence, domestic terrorism problem. These people have no concept of reality.
No, they don't, because they are the mob and the mob rules, right? I mean, the left is the mob. And they send out Antifa to attack everyone, just like they did at Ann Coulter in Berkeley. We'll be back.
Me Too movement has forced a cultural reckoning around the issue of sexual violence and harassment against women in America. Are there specific actions that you would take early in your administration to address this problem?
Yes. And by the way, it's one of the reasons the first thing I would do is make sure we pass the Violence Against Women Act reauthorization, which I wrote. The fact I didn't write the reauthorization, I wrote the original act. The fact is that what happens now is that we, in fact, have to fundamentally change the culture of how women are treated. That's why, as vice president, when I asked the president I could start the movement on the college campuses to say, it's on us. It's everyone's responsibility. We do not spend nearly enough time dealing with. I was stunned when I did a virtual town meeting that told me 30,000 people were on the call, young people between 15 and 25, and found out, I said, what do you need to make you safer on college campuses and in your schools? You know what they said? Get men involved. Engage the rest of the community. And that's when we started this movement on the college campuses to fundamentally change the culture. No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman in anger other than in self-defense, and that's rarely ever occurs. And so we have to just change the culture, period, and keep punching at it and punching at it and punching at it. It will be a big... No, I really... mean it. It's a gigantic issue, and we have to make it clear from the top, from the president on down, that we will not tolerate it. We will not tolerate this culture.
Mr. Vice President, thank you. Senator Harris, this week you criticized Mayor Pete Buttigieg's outreach.
All the time that you should have hit a woman, but right now Joe Biden said you got to punch at it, you got to punch at it. I don't think you ever should have to hit a woman. Now, there's some men that want to act like women, you can get punched. I'm not playing. You a grown man, and you dressing up, you got lipstick on and a tutu, and you want to get front, and you want to try to hurt somebody, you can get punched all day because you're not a woman. I mean, I didn't mean to go there, but that's the reality of it all. Tom, I mean,
Will, I hate to say it, Will, but because you said that, I'm just going to have to keep punching and punching and punching and punching. The guy, I don't know if he is mentally fit to stand at a podium, much less be the president of the United States. If that were a Republican saying something like that, you would have every left wing rag saying the president uses the Republican man uses a punching metaphor to talk about violence against women. It's so terrible. I was triggered. I cried. I had to go to therapy. But for some reason, aside from some right-wing websites, I think we were one of the first people to actually break that on nationalfile.com. Joe Biden seems to be getting a pass. He just has to keep punching at it, punching at it, punching at it. Left hook, right hook.
Yeah. You know what? I think Joe Biden, he served his time. It's time to put him out the pasture. I'm just saying. We're all going to reach there at some point. We're all going to get there. And, you know, I think it's a blessing to be his age to get there. I mean, there's a lot of people who would love to have his career, to love to have the experience that he's had in his lifetime. When you get to that age, just go ahead. I mean, he doesn't have to work. He's always going to be paid.
I'm sure you heard about this. He has a brand new grandchild. His son had the paternity test came back. The woman he claims he had nothing to do with, the paternity test came back.
That's a personal matter.
and then, so somebody his age, he should be spending time with his brand new grandchild. It's a tremendous time in his life. I mean, exactly. Good for him.
So we have a clip where Joe Biden is kind of like losing it. So let's go to this clip.
Are demanding investigations not only of you, but also of your son. How would you get those same Republicans to work with you?
Well, look, the next president of the United States can have to do two things. Defeat Donald Trump, that's number one. And number two, it's going to have to be able to go into states like Georgia and North Carolina and other places and get a Senate majority. That's what I'll do. You have to ask yourself up here, who is most likely to be able to win the nomination in the first place, to win the presidency in the first place? And secondly, who is most likely to increase the number of people who are Democrats in the House and in the Senate? And by the way, I learned something about these impeachment trials. I learned, number one, that Donald Trump doesn't want me to be the nominee. That's pretty clear. He held up aid to make sure that, while at the same time, innocent people in the Donbass are getting killed by Russian soldiers. Secondly, I found out that Vladimir Putin doesn't want me to be president. So I've learned a lot about these hearings early on from these hearings that they're being held. But the bottom line is, I think we have to ask ourselves the honest question, who is most likely to do what needs to be done? Produce a Democratic majority in the United States Senate, maintain the House, and beat Trump.
Senator Harris, your thoughts about that?
You know what, Tom? Be honest with you. I think President Trump wants Joe Biden to be there. I mean, if I'm President Trump and I'm running in 2020, what better candidate to have? Don't bring someone like Tulsi Gabbard. Bring someone like Joe Biden. Oh, yeah, I'm really afraid of Joe Biden, so I'm going to make it look like I'm doing an investigation on Joe Biden of something that he actually did. But no, I'm doing it because I fear Joe Biden. Really?
Well, Will, I don't want it to be Joe Biden for one reason, and I believe it is mean to bully the elderly. That was bizarre. I mean, can you imagine this guy going up against Kim Jong-un, and he says, well, first of all, the second thing you have to do,
You know what it is, Tom? He needs to get everyone to smoke the same thing that he's smoking. Go to that clip. Go to it.
This week, I hear him literally say,
that I don't think we should legalize marijuana. I thought you might have been high when you said it.
Maybe I was. I'm high. I don't remember.
Marijuana in our
country. Yeah. See, Tom? If he get everyone high with him, then everyone be like, yeah, man, rock on.
It's truly bizarre. Joe Biden's fall from grace has been a fascinating thing to watch. And I just want to point out, I mean, Joe, where's Hunter? 50,000 plus a month. Where is Hunter? This isn't a personal matter. This isn't about Russia. This isn't about Putin. This isn't about Ukraine. This is about you, your son, their corrupt businesses. I've seen emails that have been leaked where everybody's saying, well, why does Hunter Biden have this job? Who told them this would be a good idea? This is terrible. What do we do about it? How are we going to cover this up? The establishment was panicking when Hunter took this job, and Biden thought it was fantastic. So I hate to bully the elderly. Joe, you're a new grandpa again. Go hang out with your not so newborn grandson and just leave the country the hell alone, you creepy pervert.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I think the only reason why they're keeping him around, and even the producer was mentioning it, the only reason why they're keeping Sleepy Joe around is because of the whole Ukraine issue. If they got rid of Joe, then they have nothing to show. And we're like, wait a minute, he's not going to make it. So why are we still doing this? You know, let me put it this way. If Joe Biden were to step down and say, okay, you know what, I'm tired. I'm going to go take care of my new grandchild and just, you know, go watch, you know, TV or whatever, you know, take a world trip. They would say that he did that because of the pressure and because of President Trump, what he's doing to them. And they would just say he's making them go out. So President Trump got exactly what he wanted. That's how they would spin it. That's exactly how they would spin it.
Well, I think you're right. I think there's also a bit of hubris. Of course, Joe Biden kept saying in 2016, I'm thinking about running. I'm thinking about running. I'm thinking about running. Finally, it was too late. And he started saying, I should have run. I should have run. I should have run. Then, of course, the party saw Hillary Clinton lose in a spectacular electoral defeat to President Donald Trump, who now has been, for the most part, a fantastic president. And so I think Joe Biden thinks that, you know, he's just going to keep punching at Hillary Clinton and punching and punching and punching because he feels like she let the party down and only he can come in and rescue the globalist empire.
Yeah. You know what, Tom? I'm so looking forward. And if you're watching, I'm so looking forward to you, Hillary Clinton, getting in the race. Because the people need you, Hillary. The people need you. Join the fight, Hillary. Join the fight.
I do miss having the proverbial punching bag, Will. There is nothing better than Hillary Clinton with her sick husband. And now we have all of the Jeffrey Epstein, the 26 visits.
Yes.
We have all of this in front of us laid out like a big, beautiful pie. Hillary, if you're watching, I am another voice and so is Will. We are calling for you to immediately declare your candidacy.
Do it, Hillary. The country needs you right now. All right. Hey, Tom, once again, we're at the end, and it's been such an honor and a privilege and a blessing to be able to do this with you. And thank you for being here again tonight. And we will see
thank
you tomorrow
you,
night. It is Friday, so God's willing, we will see everyone tomorrow evening, Friday evening. God bless you. God bless our President Donald J. Trump. And God bless this wonderful country that God has blessed us with. Black Friday. Band.video. See you tomorrow.